Welcome to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, where modern portfolio theory can suck it. A student of the school of Graham and Doddsville and a clergy member of the Church of Warren Buffett, here's your host, Eric Schlein.
Hi, this is Eric Schlein. You're listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, and today we have Anthony Morley back on again. We are going to talk about GCI Liberty. This is a very interesting company, and I wanted to talk to you about it. Anthony, welcome to the show. And I assume you're a shareholder, right?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Yes, GCI Liberty is about a 10% position for us, so it's a full-sized one.
Right on. I think it's about a 5% position for my firm, so...
Good.
Probably should be 10%, but anyway.
Yeah, so GCI Liberty is made up of five main assets. So you've got General Communications, which is the leading telecom company in Alaska. That's about 30% of the business, of the value of the business. And that's just using the multiple that Liberty paid to purchase it. So then you also have shares in Charter. It's about 18% of the assets. And shares in Liberty Broadband, which owns entirely shares in Charter. That's about 37% of the assets. So effectively, you've got a 55% investment in Charter through those two. There's some stock and LendingTree and cash. Both of those are about 8% each. So what makes this interesting is, you know, like I said, using the price that Liberty paid for General Communications, we're getting about a 14% discount on those assets. We also get a further discount on GCI Liberty's stake in Liberty Broadband. So Liberty Broadband currently trades at a 12% discount to the shares of Charter. So you're kind of getting a double discount on owning Charter.
All right. Now, I think it would be useful for the listeners of the show to go into a little bit of history of how both Liberty Broadband came to be and how GCI Liberty came to be. Because it doesn't really make sense you start a company with this structure.
Nope. So Liberty Broadband purchased shares in Charter a few years ago. I'm not sure when that was, but they were part of some tracking stocks in the Liberty Media universe. I believe it was Liberty Ventures and Liberty Interactive, and there was a whole host of complex transactions.
Do you want to explain these complex transactions? I'm going to assume no.
No, because I don't want to screw it up.
Because you probably will. I probably would too.
Yeah. So what ended up happening is Greg Maffei and, you know, Liberty Ventures, they wanted to not have tracking stocks anymore. And General Communications was the right size for them to purchase and then have an actual asset-based stock, to not have it be tracking some asset. So they have a true stock in General Communications that actually owns the stakes in Charter and Liberty Broadband and LendingTree.
And tell us a little bit about General Communications.
Yeah, so General Communications was started, I remember the years, I believe the late 80s.
Where are they located, Anthony?
They're in Alaska, I guess. I did not mention
that. Yeah, and they have it's interesting because there are not many cable companies in Alaska, if I'm correct.
Yeah, I believe there's Alaska Telecom and then General Communications, and that's it.
So you have a duopoly, basically, in the state.
Yep, and General Communications, from what I can tell, has much better broadband internet infrastructure and much better cell phone service. They provide both.
I think it's important just to know that, because otherwise you have this, you know, if you didn't know anything about GCI, you might think, oh, well, there's this piece of shit company and Charter, so maybe it's just worth buying Liberty Broadband instead.
Yep. And yeah, so it's in Alaska, so that's kind of a random spot to be operating in. But so the United States is really not any different than anywhere else. What's interesting is that General Communications was started with an investment from TCI. I don't remember the year, but it was John Malone and TCI made an investment in General Communications to start it. So it's kind of coming full circle and ending up back in the John Malone universe.
he's a wizard.
Yes, he is. And, you know, he's got his fingers everywhere in, you know, cable and entertainment.
Yeah.
So I kind of view the, back to the discounts, I view the discounts kind of as a way to invest in Charter in, you know, kind of a leveraged fashion. And, you know, if people aren't familiar with Charter, it's the second largest broadband or cable company in the United States. It has also had several mergers in the last few years to get to be the second largest. Their EBITDA in 2018 was about $16 billion. And because of all the integrations and cost savings and kind of rationalization, I think that'll increase to about $20 billion in, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, maybe even less. And in addition, they're buying back about 10% of the company's stock each year. So this is, you know, another John Malone levered equity play. And yeah, you know, so their shares in Charter traded at $307 today, but they've declined buyout offers in the $400 and $500 range. So obviously they think that it's going to be worth more than that.
And talk to us a little bit about how you look at Charter. Just in the business itself, you know, if you were looking at, you know, Charter Communications and valuing that business, and, you know, tell us a little bit about the business, why you like it. I assume you like it. How you value it.
Yep. So I'm a big fan of the broadband internet companies. That connection to your home and using the internet is incredibly valuable. In the United States where they operate, there oftentimes aren't other competitors, or the competitor is something like CenturyLink that is a DSL connection and has a much, much slower speed, maybe 30 megabytes per second compared to Charter, which is over 100. And so these companies, the video business is becoming less important over time. You know, people are cutting the cord, but the business is also low margin. But no one's cutting the cord on the internet. You know, you're not, no one's getting rid, or hardly anybody's getting rid of the internet. And so over time, you're going to keep that connection. It's a high margin product for them. Cable One estimates, I believe, that their operating expense for their broadband customers are $15 per subscriber. And in Charter's case, I believe they're charging about $58 a year. So if their operating cost is similar, which it should be, should even be less, you know, they're making an extremely healthy margin on that.
Right. And talk to us a little bit about 5G, because people, you know, some people might see 5G as a threat to the business.
Yep, definitely. Really, the only company that thinks they'll be successful in 5G is Verizon.
Do you think they really think that, or do you think there's something else going on there?
I'll get to that. Yeah, so AT&T has come out and said that they don't think there's a business case for it. Essentially, I think the capital expenditures to have 5G into the home, and so that you can watch Netflix on your, you know, say through your TV, and get rid of your internet connection, it would cost them a ton of money to have the small cell towers in your neighborhood. And in some places like New York City, where it's very, very dense, that might work. But in most of the country where houses are more spread out, I think the capital cost will be way too much to earn a good return for 5G. That'd be great for your cell phone and stuff, but I don't think you're going to get rid of your home internet for it. And, you know, so Verizon's been the only one that's really, really been touting it. But Verizon just a year or two ago offered to buy Charter. And likely because Charter has the fiber in the ground in those neighborhoods already.
I was going to say they have some interesting infrastructure.
Yep, they would save them a ton of money just to connect a small cell to fiber. Because you can't just build a small cell. Even though the internet or the, you know, 5G is wireless, it has to be connected to a fiber still. And then that just isn't going to change anytime soon.
And also the fiber, in terms of that infrastructure also helps with, I think the technical term is the data backlog for, that would be required for 5G as well.
Backhaul, I believe.
Backhaul, yeah. That, there you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So you need fiber for the backhaul to transmit the data. Yeah.
I would say it's one of the interesting things about investing in these companies is it's been forcing me to read more technical stuff about how this all works.
Yeah, so I've read a ton of white papers on 5G in the last probably 6 months. I bet
probably more than you ever have in your life, I would imagine.
Absolutely no question.
Join the party.
No question. It's been fun to learn about, but it's for me. I think it's shown that Charter's and Comcast are in great positions. They've gone on some incredibly valuable assets.
It also shows how lazy some of these analysts are when they go, "Oh, 5G. These other companies are irrelevant." And it's like, did you read anything? Like,
yeah, and you know, it's what's interesting too is, you know, Verizon's been talking about this, but Charter is also releasing cell phone service, and they're using Verizon's network through an MVNO agreement to do it.
Tell listeners what that means.
So Charter gets to use Verizon's network when the mobile users aren't using, you know, say their internet. So Charter gets to use Verizon's network. And I think it's very possible that you end up with, you know, Charter could end up with 1 million or 2 million subscribers, mobile subscribers, and they're kind of dipping the toe in the water into being a connectivity company, you know, not just being an internet company.
Right.
And, you know, there are potential huge synergies between a wireless company and the wired companies. But Brian Roberts of Comcast and John Malone and Tom Rutledge of Charter aren't interested in the wireless business because they don't think it's very high returns on capital. You know, Malone talked about that at the last Liberty Investor Day in November. So they think they'll be playing in it, but they don't. They're not really excited to get into it either.
Right.
So with Charter, you know, Malone laid out the logic, and it's pretty much right in line with mine that he thinks that you're going to have Charter growing at a high single digit EBITDA. They're going to stay at about the same leverage ratio, and they've got a big NOL, so they're not going to be paying taxes, I believe, until 2023 or 24. And they'd be buying back stock in that time. So if you just project out a fair multiple in 5 years, you know, in the interview, he put his hands above his head and he's like, this is where the stock would trade. And I think that's probably over $500 a share.
So to go back to GCI, if you're owning GCI instead of Charter, you're actually making a higher rate of return.
Correct. You could potentially make a higher rate of return. Now, if the discounts haven't closed, if they're the same discounts, then you'd probably make the same return. But I suspect that there will be some sort of transaction if Charter wants.
You got to remember GCI during that time is going to be buying GCI Liberty is going to be buying back their own stock as well during that time as well.
Correct. So I believe in the second quarter earnings call of 2018, Greg Maffei, the CEO, said that, yes, they noticed the discounts and they're going to look to take advantage of them. So to me, that means that GCI is likely going to buy back some of their stock.
No shit.
Yep. And they have some cash laying around too, so they definitely have the money to do it.
You know what blows me away about all of this is that they literally publicly will announce their intentions and, like, nothing happens to the stock price.
Yeah, it is funny, isn't it?
Because you got to imagine, right? I mean, if Warren Buffett came out and he's like, you know, we're probably going to buy back 10% of Berkshire stock at a 1.4 times book value, you know, we'll go as high as 1.5 times book value. You got to imagine the stock would immediately run up to 1.5 times book value, like, overnight.
You would think, but it probably wouldn't. It should, but it
wouldn't. I don't know. I think if he was that clear, it probably would. So maybe we can agree to disagree on that, but I've seen a lot of times where, you know, companies will make some announcement or some view that they have. And I don't know, more often than not, the stock price will somewhat reflect that. But for whatever reason, it seems that when these John Malone companies literally acknowledge the obvious, nothing happens to the stock price. And it kind of blows my mind. And it almost makes me wonder if there's just, you know, in the market, if there's just so much capital, you know, in this is a sort of a different conversation, but there's so much capital that's going into you know, index funds and index fund based, you know, securities and ETF based securities, that maybe there's just not the kind of institutional demand for these securities.
That could be.
Like to me that's the only. And tell me if you think I'm wrong. Like I actually do think about this a lot. Like, it doesn't make sense on the surface that these discounts would exist. So either we're really fucking wrong about shit, right? And it's just like we're not seeing something that everyone else in the market is seeing, or there's just not enough demand for the shares. Like I sometimes I feel like talking about market psychology is like a little beneath me, because I'm, you know, I always like to focus on fundamentals. But I think in this case you kind of have to acknowledge there is that market psychology, or just basic supply and basic laws of supply and demand, where that, like, if the fundamentals are there but there isn't just demand for the shares, it's, you're not going to have the movement you would expect in a market where there's kind of equal demand for different kinds of asset classes. And what are your thoughts on that?
No, well, I mean, I'm just thinking specifically about the discounts of the Liberty companies. You know, I'd like to talk to somebody to explain that believes that it should be there.
But I haven't found one yet. That's like, that's what scares me, right? Like, I always like to talk to someone who, like, you know, like when I invested in Trupanion, right? It's like nice to read articles and hear about the other side of things, and, you know, this is why we hate this company, and this is why we're shorting, and even, right? Like, there's lots of stuff out there, and I like to read that to sort of stress test my own logic, right? Because I'm going to be flawed sometimes too. So I love that back and forth debate for a company like Trupanion, and I've even liked the back and forth debate I've seen over the years with SiriusXM. Like, there's a great write up on Value Investors Club. I think it was maybe from like a year and a half ago now. That was a short thesis on SiriusXM. And I remember reading it and being like, oh wow, I'm very confidently disagreeing with this write up, but I'm glad it's there, so I'm not crazy that this view could exist. But I've never, and I'd love to meet someone who goes, oh yeah, this is trading at a 30% discount, and it should, and this is why. And I haven't found that yet, and it freaks me out a little bit, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, the only explanation I can come up with is that they think GCI just isn't worth that much. But, you know, that's only 30% of the assets.
Yeah, but okay, but let's talk about, like, you know, in the same principle, let's go to, why does Liberty Broadband trade at, what is it, a 15% discount or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's 14.
Okay.
Check today, yeah.
I'm sorry, that doesn't matter. If it's 14 or 15 or 17. But I mean, the point is, it's not like 3 to 5.
No, and yeah, in that situation, I just don't get it.
Why does Liberty Sirius trade at like a 30% or 30? I'm sorry, 30.4. Okay, 2% discount to, you know, they're mostly it's just mostly SiriusXM, and there's Pandora and other stuff too, but mostly SiriusXM. Why does that discount exist? Can you explain that to me, besides just supply and demand?
That one I can understand, for maybe people think that Liberty Sirius is going to pay.
Gonna buy out SiriusXM, you get a premium?
Shares. Yep. That would make sense to me why people think that way. I don't think it's going to happen.
They've already said it's not going to happen.
Yeah. But,
like, you know, this is my point, right? They've literally have fucking said they're not going to be paying these huge premiums to buy out SiriusXM, most likely. So you'd think the stock price would somewhat reflect with the very own management saying, and it's not like the management team has this horrible track record of just making up shit as they go along, right? I mean, there's other companies where the management says something, I don't really give a shit, because they're not really trustworthy to begin with. But, like, they've been pretty spot on with their projections, with how they see things going forward. And obviously, John Malone's been pretty spot on for quite a few decades. So it blows my mind that the market treats them as this untrustworthy management team.
Yeah, I don't get it either. It doesn't make sense to me.
You know what? It literally could be as simple, right? Sometimes, you know, there's that principle that when you don't know something, there's a few missing holes of information. Often the answer is the simple, obvious answer. And to me, the simple, obvious answer is there's a lack of demand. Some, you know, tracking stocks or companies that own tracking stocks and have weird structures are just things that analysts or institutional money managers don't want to deal with or talk about. These aren't, you know, significantly, you know, $100 billion companies either. So a lot of these aren't even traded in, you know, or a lot of these companies aren't on indexes and ETFs, right? So you have a lack of demand for that. And that just might be what it is.
Right.
And on top of that, and then on top of all of that, you're in one of the most out of favored industries right now, and that have been for the past few years as well. So you combine lack of demand with awkward corporate structures with an industry that's already out of favor. So you have a triple whammy. That might just be all it is. It might be that simple.
Yeah, it very well might be. It makes sense.
Yeah. Back to GCI Liberty. How do you look at, you know, valuing GCI, or do you, compared to what they bought it at, or do you just say, hey, I trust John Malone made a good investment, and the industry is kind of undervalued as it is, so I would imagine that as those fears of cord cutting dissipate, that GCI would just have a higher valuation anyway, and that, you know, it's a good company and they probably paid a good price. Is it really that simple, you're thinking, or do you go deeper?
It's somewhat that simple, but I've got a spreadsheet where I look at not every cable company in the world, but a lot of them, and I compare what they're trading for right now, and then what some transactions have happened at. And to me, it looks like they paid a very fair price for it.
For GCI.
Yeah. And Alaska has been in a bit of a recession, so if things get a little bit better back there or up there, then, you know, maybe it'd be worth even more than that.
Okay. That's generally along the same lines.
Wasn't crazy low either. I think it was 8.9 times after synergies, so that's right in line with where other things trade at. So, what the end game is here, if the discounts never close, then we'll just get the return on Charter, essentially. But if these discounts do close, I think what'll make that happen is, you know, Charter might buy General Communications, because their cost to service the subscribers is probably substantially less per subscriber. And there's probably some, you know, cost savings on the programming on the old video side.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would probably make sense that GCI is part of a larger enterprise. But, you know, you never know. That's something that John Malone's going to have to remove himself from, because he's conflicted, and Charter would have to decide that on their own. And if they did, they could spin out the shares in Charter, and then you'd have to figure out what to do with the shares in Liberty Broadband to close that discount, too. But I have no doubt that Greg Maffei and John Malone are thinking about that and trying to figure out what to do.
And I have no doubt that whatever it is, it'll be something incredibly complicated.
Yes, I'm explaining it way too simply what would actually happen.
I'll need to have like a tax lawyer on to like explain it to me.
Definitely.
Without getting it wrong.
And the other thing too is I don't have a timeline for this, but I do think it'll happen sometime.
I would actually say it's inevitable that the corporate structure won't always look like this, which doesn't take that much of a stretch to think. I don't believe. But what the transaction will be, I think they probably have some ideas, but I don't think they would fully know what the transaction will be, because it'll depend on, you know, what they can buy, what market valuations look like, just the market environment, you know. So that a lot of that's dependent on what's available to them, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Right, because, you know, let's say they couldn't get, you know, when they bought GCI, like, you know, let's say they couldn't get a fair price on GPI, that might be GCI, it might be some other company, right? Because you would need to be able to not overpay, right? So either have a fair price or less, and then you would need, you know, you would also need that company to be available, right? And then you would also need, well, that's actually saying the same thing, but then you would also need a company of a proper size to do the transaction. So there's like all these moving parts and variables, and you know, if they were in that exact same position, but maybe 5-10 years before or 5-10 years in the future, maybe it's not GCR they would have bought, you know? So,
well, and even further too, I think they wanted to buy an asset that Charter would look to buy.
Well, I was actually going to say that was the other thing we missed. It has to be in the proper industry.
Yeah. So. Yeah, exactly.
They're not buying like Dell computer or something.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that pretty much explains my thesis on GCI Liberty.
Now, why is it only a 10% position for you? You can actually refuse to answer the question if you want.
So I have investments in a lot of other telecom broadband internet companies. So I just didn't want to make it too big. I wanted to own some of the other ones. They all have different characteristics, and I'm not going to try and pretend I know which one is going to have better returns. Mm-hmm. You know, one of them is very, very cheap. Another one's going to have, I think, a lot of subscriber growth. And this one, I've got the discount. So they're all different situations.
Right. You know what's also interesting is content companies as well.
Like Discovery or something like that, or
yeah. I own, and my clients we own Discovery shares. Have we ever discussed that?
I'm sure I've discussed it before, but I didn't remember it.
Okay, I almost perfectly bottom ticked it too, which is pure luck.
That was nice.
I watched
John Malone said that it was a cash flow machine.
No, afterwards. That's what's insane about it.
Oh, weird.
It didn't go up right after he said it. It went up like 2 weeks after he said that. So I'm going to tell you a really interesting story. I was in the car driving somewhere because I do a lot of these road trips.
For sure.
I'm talking to you from Nashville, by the way, actually, in a makeshift, kind of a cool, it's like a studio setup. I have a mixer next to me that I'm not even using, but it feels badass that I have a giant mixer next to me.
Yeah, it's going to record your country music record next.
Yeah,
time,
and
sure.
I have several guitars hanging up on the walls around me, and a keyboard to my left, and another keyboard to my right. It's pretty badass. And I'm in Nashville, and I have big speakers around me and everything. about Discovery. I'm in the car, and I was like, you know, I'm kind of in the mood to listen to John Malone. You know, that's a normal thing that people listen to while they're in the car, right? And I do a YouTube search for John Malone, and there was this one interview. It might have been on CNBC. Was it CNBC he did that interview with? Or
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know why I remember it was CNBC? Because CNBC, I usually just watch for entertainment. Like, I don't think I've ever got an investment value from CNBC. And I've been watching CNBC since I'm like 16 years old, right? Yeah. Okay. So we're both freaks like that. So, anyway, I'm listening to this interview. He talks about Discovery, and he's like, "Yeah, you know, there's all these fears of cost cutting, but you know, content is still worth something, and you could still have if Discovery works out, and maybe I'm wrong, you still have these double digit cash flows." So of course I'm like, "That's interesting." And John Malone saying it, so I give him some more validity. But, you know, after I got out of the car, I pulled over like a McDonald's or something, went used their Wi-Fi, and like started looking at Discovery. And of course, it's like, holy shit, like this is actually really interesting. So maybe a week after that, I watched that, I bought shares and I made it a 5% position. And I bought it at like, I don't know, like 7, I think my cost basis is like 17 and change or something like that, or 16 and change.
Their free cash flow is like $3 a share too.
Right. Yeah. So I was getting these, you know, double digit free cash flow yields, and I didn't personally see free cash flow going off a cliff, right? Content's still worth something. And Discovery has, this is not a show about Discovery, but it's my show. I can do what the fuck I want. So, what's interesting too is if you look at the economics of like the Discovery Channel and like shit with animals, like it can cost like $500,000 to do like, you know, an episode.
The programming is very cheap, and that's the secret to Discovery.
Yeah, because you don't have to pay animals acting contracts, believe it or not.
Just gotta get somebody to Alaska to film it with a camera.
That's it, right? So the economics are fantastic on these shows, and unless you think that everyone's going to stop watching these shows, like, that's great content that, that someone could buy. So I actually would say that, you know, at some point Discovery may not even be its own. Obviously they did the merger and stuff, but I could see them getting, you know, them getting bought out at some point and not being a standalone company anymore.
Yeah, I could definitely see that too. I could see them being part of a larger organization.
Yeah, and I could see a lot of these content companies being part of a larger organization as time goes on.
Yeah, probably Disney or Netflix with how things
are. I was just going to say it could be Disney. I could see Disney doing it. Or Netflix. Or Netflix as well.
Yeah. Disney's one we should do a podcast on. I don't have a position in it, but
I don't either. Does Netflix though, do they make a lot of acquisitions, or are they mostly just making their own content?
They're making their own content.
That's what I thought.
So they have offices right in LA where, you know, people that are making shows come and pitch them, and, you know, they fund them to make the show.
Right. So would they have any incentive to buy in Discovery? I never even thought of Netflix as a potential buyer for them.
Probably not because of them being a traditional cable bundle, but maybe.
Yeah. Huh. And this stuff's changing rapidly. So I think that's the other really, just from a business fascination standpoint, you can't really look at the past for what's going to happen in the future with this stuff because it's all new territory of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so Netflix could decide that their model is going to buy Discovery. Who the fuck knows? You know, like, I wouldn't just dismiss something because it hasn't happened in the past with the industry, because a lot of things are changing.
Yep, no doubt. I mean, you know, like Amazon did that. You know, they have historically made smaller acquisitions, but they bought Whole Foods and that.
So they totally bought a supermarket. Right? Exactly. So I think you have to be. I think the way to think about these things, at least the way that I think about these things, is I don't go, okay, I think Discover is going to get bought out, or, oh, I think this is going to happen with this content. For me, it was a bet that, like, this content isn't going away. And if it doesn't go away and Discovery doesn't go off a cliff, you know, these free cash flow yields are amazing. So I look at it in, like, the opposite of, like, is it going to be as bad as people think? No? Okay, if it's not that bad and maybe there's no growth, then what does it look like? Oh, now it's interesting. That's how I look at it personally.
For sure. And Discovery is unique in that they have a lot of international distribution that many of the other U.S. content companies don't have.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, I think, that if you want to talk about Discovery, that's a whole other episode as well.
Sure.
But I think that to kind of bring it back to GCI, the principle for me is you really cannot predict the future with these businesses. I think it's more of like you say, okay, you're going to have this, you know, with the cable and telecom, you know, you're going to have low single-digit growth. 5G is not going to destroy these companies. And if anything, 5G could actually be some benefit to these companies because you got to imagine that Charter will somehow participate in the growth of 5G over time, I would imagine, just from what I've read, with their pre-existing infrastructure. So if you don't think that's Armageddon, then a lot of these companies are probably cheap. I mean, even Comcast, a totally different business model, but those are low multiples too.
Yeah, yes, they are.
And they're going a different. Their business model is a bit different than Charter's, if I recall. I haven't done as much work on them, but I think it's likely if you just had a basket of this stuff that you saw as low multiples and they all had, you know, different ways of approaching this and different business models, I think you should probably come out with a pretty nice rate of return over the next 10 years.
Yeah, I totally agree. And yeah, Comcast is one that I owned in from 2012 to 15, I think. Probably should have just held on to it, never sold it. But my thinking has evolved in the quality of the broadband business since then.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, anything else you think is worth mentioning that we've talked about, or do you think I'm wrong about anything that I've said? Like, feel free. Like,
oh, you're probably wrong about everything.
Okay, great, fantastic. Yeah.
I think we pretty much covered.
By the way, if I'm wrong about everything, then you're in a pretty fucking bad position right now.
Yeah, that's true. That's
true. You're coming down with me.
Yeah. So, I think by investing in GCI Liberty, you get a nice discount on owning shares in Charter. And eventually, like, those discounts will close because of some type of transaction. But I don't know when.
Yeah, no way to know.
All right, well, thanks for having me on again.
All right, my friend. Well, you have a good rest of your day, and I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thanks.
All right, see you, man.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast with Eric Schlein. If you'd like to connect with Eric for questions, comments, feedback, ideas, or to inquire about being on the show, please contact Eric at intelligentinvesting@gmail.com. So, in the words of Charlie Munger, I have nothing to add.